Welcome to the Where Does It Come From podcast. I'm Jo Salter, your podcast host and founder of Where Does It Come From, a social enterprise focusing on kind clothes that tell tales. In this podcast, I chat with amazing people who've dedicated themselves to making our world a better place through business, social enterprise, campaigning, and much more. In this episode, I'm chatting with Emma Matthews, founder of Socko, which has created the UK's first 100% recycled socks. From a career in graphic design and then advertising, to time spent living in France, Emma put all her skills and experience together to create Socko in 2018. She also runs darning and mending workshops, and every pair of socks comes with a darning thread, needle, and instructions to encourage you to mend them when they start to wear through. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Where Does It Come From podcast. It's great to be here, and we have a fantastic guest today. We'll be talking all about socks with Emma Matthews, who is the founder of Socko. So enough from me. Emma, would you like to introduce yourself and tell the audience all about your background and your journey?
Sure. Hi, Jo. Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for having me. So as you said, I'm Emma. I'm the founder of UK sock brand Socko, and I launched Socko back in 2018. So it's been going for a little while now. And the world has obviously turned upside down and back round again in that time. And it's been quite a journey as a business owner to go through all of that, but also the rise of awareness around sustainability and the importance of understanding the origins of where your clothes come from. So it's been great to get more and more people who understand that, and the reason why something as trivial as a pair of socks still holds importance. So my background is actually a bit of an interesting one. I went to art school originally, so I studied graphic design back in the day, and it was a very conceptual course, and I actually spent the third year of it knitting my way through, so using knitting as a form of communication, which Camberwell, which is part of UAL, was very open to that. They seemed to encourage me on that journey, and I got to the end of the course and realized that actually graphic design wasn't really going to be the vocation for me. So I actually bought a one-way ticket to France, and I moved out there for 2 years, and I was waitressing and learning the language, and it was sort of my first time free to do whatever it was that I wanted to do in the world. I went straight from school to uni, so it was my first flavour of freedom. And while I was out there, I got talking to somebody who worked in advertising, and it kind of turned out that what we'd been learning on a communications degree was really well set up to work within advertising, but advertising had always been that dirty word. It had always been kind of shunned and frowned upon from the artistic side of things. So I'd never considered it until that point. Anyway, long story short, I came back, did a master's in advertising, worked in the advertising industry for about 5 years before experiencing what I can only really describe as burnout, which feels very common to a lot of people nowadays. But it kind of started with physical health, leading on to mental health, and then just realizing that actually looking at the rungs of the ladder, it wasn't one that I could see myself climbing. So I withdrew, and while still working, worked out what it was that I was going to do next. And how did I get from advertising to socks? Well, it was a combination of things that I'm good at, things that I enjoy, and things that people need rather than want. So in the middle of that strange Venn diagram was a pair of socks. And I spent about a year in the making and in the formulation of it before quitting my job in advertising, working on reception to kind of pay the bills while I was getting things off the ground. But just having a job where I could close the door at the end of the day and not feel that I was carrying it home with me, and, you know, being at someone's beck and call every hour of the day made a massive difference to being able to get Socko off the ground. And yeah, it's been going since 2018. So
wow,
that's where we got to.
An interesting story. I mean, it's really interesting in lots of ways. I mean, also the France thing, super interesting. But the idea of changing your path, that really resonates with me a lot because that was very similar to me. And I think my view is that you can be going along a path. I mean, with me, I was working in telecommunications, and you can be enjoying it, and you can be getting skills, and you can be meeting great people. And to all extents and purposes, on paper, something that is a successful career, but there's something inside. And if you're not aligned, it sounds a bit deep and hippie and spiritual, but if you're not aligned with what you're doing emotionally, something is unbalanced, isn't it? And it goes wrong. So, I mean, yours was obviously your physical and mental health was affected by the fact that you weren't actually fulfilling what your mind and body actually wanted to do. With me, it was much more, yeah, it was probably a mental health thing, but just something that was amiss. And in the end, we both were lucky enough, I suppose, to be able to change, to be able to make that change. Whereas I know a lot of people don't have that luck in their life to actually be able to make that change in their life. But now that's really interesting that you did that. And I think increasingly people are doing that, and increasingly women are doing that as well. So it's certainly very powerful, I think, that you can actually halfway through a successful career go, well, actually, this isn't for me. I need to do what feels right. So well done for
Oh, thanks,
that.
Joe. Yeah, for
Sounds
sure.
quite
I
catchy.
think you're absolutely right. So many people are starting side hustles or, want to have that kind of passive income. And I have to say, if you want a passive income, starting your own business is not the way to get there. It will take up every waking hour. But I wanted something that I was excited to wake up for, that would keep me up late, and that I really passionately care about. And it's not for me about being an entrepreneur, even though you get that label. I'd never really considered that. You get a lot of serial entrepreneurs in the game who, will pick a service or a product, and run with it, and then, flip it. Like you see, I'm obsessed with property programs, so I'm thinking about flipping a house. But it's never about that for me. It's socks, and if it's not socks, then I'll have to go back to square one and really think about where it is next on the journey. But I do think as well, to the point about people and luck, that there's actually I totally recognize my privilege to have had that time to be able to step back and do a job that was half the salary of what I was previously on. But I do also think that no one's ever going to tell you, oh, now is the right time. Go for it now, because this is the safest point. That there isn't anything like that. And same with the one way ticket to Paris. No one gave permission. No one said this is going to be great. And it was great, but it also had, a lot. It was a massive journey, and the lessons that I learned in the 2 years out there was similar to the lessons that I learned in my more corporate career. So it's all part of that.
Yeah, like, well, life's about learning, isn't it? And you have to put yourself into the position to be learning. And I think going back to what you said about entrepreneurialism, I think you're absolutely right, actually. It's a distinction to make from the serial entrepreneurs. And I don't know if you've done any accelerator programs or incubators or anything like that. And you meet both kinds, don't you, on those? And there's nothing wrong with either. Everyone has their own journey. But for some people, they want to get into something, start it up, they have a good idea. And then they move on to the next thing and the next thing. And they have different reasons for doing that. It could be financial, or could be just their personality type, or they feel they can give everything to something and then move on. Or there's the other type that have a passion for a particular thing, So I think I'm somewhere between the two, if not both, but probably between the two. But I know what you mean about if it's not socks. For me, I wouldn't want to run a business that wasn't around sustainability or traceability or something like that, But yeah, so maybe it's more subject based, but no, it's an interesting one, and everyone has their own value in this, don't they, and how they do it. So Soco 2018, as you say, just before the pandemic, that must have been great fun.
Good times. Well, you know what? It actually was. We launched at a time when there was a real appetite. People were out and about. There were lots of zero waste markets starting up. Things were happening in that sphere that hadn't really been happening before, to my knowledge, or it had been much more niche. So we were able to join in to a lot of things like that and meet lots of like-minded businesses who I'm still in touch with today, who have been fantastic supports, where we're we're in a similar journey. But it all started off fantastic, and then the pandemic happened, and the pivot was the pivot was real. We really had to go, okay, well, what does this look like now? Because a lot of it had been direct sales at markets, and suddenly we were a small independent business on with the noise of the entire internet to then try and cut through. And I think again it was about community during that time, and pairing up with other like-minded businesses to get the word out, because other like-minded businesses are also your customer, and they have that reach that you can't necessarily get on your own. And I think that actually, I remember from like marketing days, the shift to digital being a very scary concept for a lot of kind of older marketeers, because they'd been working with broadcast, and now they had to think about how this level playing field of, essentially Coca-Cola has a website and a startup business has a website, and that how do you, yes, you've got all the budget behind Coca-Cola, but how do you compete? And actually, it kind of made it easier for me as a startup to have that more level playing field. And I think pandemic, actually, people started to shop online in a shop independence online more than they used to. So, I definitely think it was helpful for generating more online sales. But so much of the initial part of a business is about understanding your audience, understanding your customer. And so having those conversations over a market stall was so valuable. And so to be able to have done that before then being isolated was a massive advantage, I'd say.
So that's really interesting about the pandemic. I think you're right, certainly in terms of the community side, and we found the same thing, and people wanting to support businesses in their local area and business that they've heard of as well. I think there was also people who had a bit more residual income from not being able to be in the office but still being paid, and there was a lot of people who did decide to make very altruistic purchases around that time, didn't they? Because they wanted to support the businesses that they believed in. So that was really helpful for a lot of the ethical businesses that I know, and obviously for Soco as well. So going back
Definitely,
to
it was those little luxuries. So being able to have, a pair of reclaimed cashmere merino wool socks just for when you're working at home and you're only dressed from the middle upwards, was just it was a nice sort of treat to give yourself when you had that, as you say, slight increase in disposable income.
And I think people were gifting people as well, weren't they? So you couldn't see your loved ones, so you would gift them. But I want to come back to Soco, and you just mentioned one of the key parts of the product. So tell us what's so special about Soco, because I mean, I absolutely love the idea behind the brand, but you give it a good sales pitch here.
Thanks, Jo. So all of our socks are made from waste, and what that means is that the first range was reclaimed cotton, and that was cotton from mills around the UK. So yarn that would otherwise go to waste because it's the end of a production line of a larger item, or it's been rejected because it's got a slight streaking effect but is still perfectly good, usable, workable yarn. That was our initial range, which was reclaimed. We then got some reclaimed wool. So we did a reclaimed cashmere merino wool collection. And what I really like about working with reclaimed materials is that you're quite constrained in terms of what you can do. The colour palette is really limited. It was about pairing up colours in terms of quantity. So, okay, I've got more of that, so that could be the main body of the sock. I've got less of that, that could be a contrast heel and toe. And it really kind of informing the design decisions. And from the get-go, it's really been led by the material rather than my enjoyment. I do enjoy design, but it's been about getting a fundamentally great pair of socks. And that is through the classic design that my manufacturers are willing and able to make. So it was about meeting in the middle between, okay, thank you, you're kindly willing to work with the material that I supply you with. What can you do? What's most accessible, and what's going to make a really robust sock? That, I mean, the manufacturers I work with have been going for 4 generations now, so they really know their stuff when it comes to socks. And I didn't want to try and reinvent the wheel. And then actually, in our first meeting with the factory, I was told, if you want Mickey Mouse on your socks, then you've come to the wrong place. And I was like, that's okay. I don't want Mickey Mouse on my socks. So it was very much we've collaborated, and it's been a really nice partnership. I see it as a partnership, from working with what they can do, being understanding of the whole process. I've spent time at the factory learning to handling pitocin. Spent about a week kind of doing the graft there, which was just an invaluable experience. And I think, there was a bit of reluctance for me doing that because, it would take away from the time of the people that are working on the machines to be teaching me, and really what gain would they get out of it. But yeah, I worked hard, I proved myself, and it was another great experience. And part of understanding what goes on behind those factory doors so that I can make sure that I'm a good client, and that I'm working with them within reasonable understandings of what's feasible, basically.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing there. I mean, one thing to state really openly is that all of your socks are UK made, so your value chain is very short, isn't it? Which is great
That's right.
in terms of carbon footprint. So the materials are collected up from UK factories or whatever, and then go to your partner's factory and then to you. So nothing comes from anywhere outside the UK apart from like cotton originally.
So the cotton originally, yes, but also our recycled range. So the recycled fibres do come from abroad, but the furthest place that anything comes from is Slovenia. So that's where the Econil or Econil is produced. So it's an Italian company, but they make it in Slovenia.
Anyone who doesn't know, Econil is basically recycled plastic polyester, basically, isn't it?
They like to use the word regenerated, and it's but yes, it's fundamentally a nylon that has the same properties as virgin nylon, but it's 100% recycled.
I know a lot of ethical swimwear brands use it because then you can talk about using recycled ocean waste to make swimwear, which is quite a nice little analogy. But I guess it's lots of different types of plastic that are used to actually make Econil
Yeah, I think there's quite a lot of carpet waste, so there's a lot of industry waste as well as fishing nets, but the fishing nets are very very tangible as a visual. So I think they tried to steer away from the turtle in the fishing net, but yeah, that is still a component
Econil.
of Echinel.
So it's interesting that so if you think about breaking down what a sock is, you've got a mixture of your natural fiber, which in your case is recycled or repurposed from waste, and your other polyester stroke nylon part, which is your regenerated Econil. So everything in the sock is made from regenerated or repurposed fiber, and it's all done within a very short supply chain and all manufactured in the UK. So it's very exciting from the point of view of sustainability. Because you've got the smaller carbon footprint as well, and the waste breakdown, and you've got the recycling and regeneration as well. So it sort of ticks three very big boxes sustainability wise.
It definitely does, Joe. Yeah, I figured that someone has to really nerd out about these things, and that someone, why couldn't it be me? So, it's taken a lot of research, a lot of conversations, especially as a micro business, to try and deal with these large companies who, obviously have large minimum order quantities and so forth. And it was a very exciting moment when I was able to launch the UK's first 100% recycled sock. It was something that had been on the goal list from day one. So yeah, it was a big achievement.
Well, I think it is something to massively celebrate. I think if anybody's listening, it probably feels like a bit of a no-brainer because people think these things have existed for a while, but obviously they haven't, And socks as well, a lovely basic. I mean, I know that someone we both know well, Sarah Jordan from You Underwear, who has also been on the podcast and is an old friend. I mean, that choosing a basic was a really important thing for her, and I'm sure a sock is the same idea. People are always going to need socks. People are always going to need underwear, and you don't really like to go and buy secondhand socks unless they're very nearly new. So, having a repurposed fibers in that sock is a really good way of creating a new product but using old ingredients, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah, you're spot on there. I thought, okay, well, there is a gap in the market for secondhand socks, but it's not one I'm going to explore myself. So it was about doing things as sustainably as possible, given that it is a new product.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'm a bit of a supply chain nerd, so it's also very interesting to look back over your supply chain, and it would be nice at some point, wouldn't it, to trace even back the composite materials, which I guess is probably not possible at the moment, because if you're going to factories and you're saying, what have you got that's left over, what have you got that's waste, that's going into the waste? But it would be nice in years to come, I imagine there will be technologies in place where you can even go back and say, this cotton waste, where did that originate from? That would be
Yeah,
lovely.
definitely. I love there are brands like Sheep Incorporated who are doing fantastic things of being able to get right back to the source. And I with the recycled range, it's easier to do that. And I had a life cycle assessment done with a company called Birth, B Earth. And they found that our socks were 46% better for the planet than your average pair of socks, which is, they were really pleased with the result. I was really pleased with the result. So it's great to be able to quantify things like that. As you say, being a supply chain nerd, but a nerd in general, it's important to be able to put the numbers to
Yeah, but I imagine most people who are listening to this thinking, what are they going on about? Who cares? I
it.
mean, really, we know it's recycled cotton, but being a nerd, you can't help it.
And I also think it's on us to do the due diligence. It's, they may not care, but if you're going to type in eco-friendly sock, there's so much greenwashing out there. I want to be able to stand by what I've done. I want to be able to go, okay, for those who do want the nuts and bolts and to lift up the skirt and find out what's gone into it, I'm completely transparent and proud of what I've done. So it's I get excited talking about it, but I understand that, yeah, like you say, it's not for everyone. They just want a fundamentally great pair of socks. So I want to be able to provide that too, but then also make sure that I can sleep easy knowing that I've done my best to make it good for people and planet along the way.
I think it's trust too, because I certainly have found, I mean, Where Does It Come From has been going over 10 years now. And I think there's an element of trust that people don't always need to go and read the stories and find out exactly how each garment was made when they bought a few things over the years, because they trust you. They get to know you as a brand and as a person, and know that you are passionate about it, and you're going to do things in a way that they're happy with. So they don't need to be quite so on it, you know?
Definitely, definitely.
Okay, now that's all, it's all really good stuff, but now I want to find out what some of your barriers are, because there may be people who are listening who think, well, that sounds really easy. And she's done this really easy job of setting up the UK's first recycled socks, 100% recycled socks. What have been the barriers for you?
Oh my goodness. Right. Well, this could be the longest part of the interview. So barriers, I mean, I've already touched on it, but for me personally, mental health has been a massive barrier. So when it's just you and you can't work, that's everything grinding to a halt. And so actually finding ways to work around that or alongside that has been a really important part of starting my own business, because you're only really accountable to yourself. And you kind of have to be kind to yourself because, not only do you have to go out there and be confident in what you've done and sing your own praises and back yourself, but you've also got to give yourself that time to regroup and look after yourself when you need to. So that's been getting that balance. I mean, I'm still not sure that I've fully mastered it, but soccer is still standing. I'm still standing. So that's about as much as I can quantify on that front. I think other barriers that have been around scale. I mean, I set out to do the right thing, not to sell as many socks as possible. And yet, it's very hard not to compare yourself. And I think that can be a pitfall that happens to a lot of. Not just small businesses, but a lot of people in general and career progression, I think, getting bogged down with, oh, so and so is doing that now, or oh, and also falling into the trap of social media and actually, you never really know what's going on behind closed doors for so many people. So, yeah, I think that's been a barrier to kind of getting more done. You also mentioned accelerators, and I've been doing an accelerator that I think you were on before as well, which I found hugely valuable, just having that coaching, and this kind of overcomes the barrier of feeling like you're a the term solopreneur, but that you're in it on your own, that you've just got the four walls and your idea to keep you company, to be able to bounce things with like-minded businesses or with mentors or with a coach, is hugely valuable. So I really try and get involved with things like that as well, and just manage networking alongside having that time to myself that I know that I need.
I think it's very validating. I found with the done a couple. I did Cambridge Social Ventures back a long time ago, and then also the NatWest Climate Accelerator, which we did over a couple of years. And I think for me, certainly the first doing actually was even before that. I did School for Social Entrepreneurs right when we were launching, so a good long time ago now. But that made me feel like we were a real business. Whereas I think before, like you said, it was that person on my own with the four walls and a cat sort of thing. And it's you, when you feel it a real business, because I think friends and family love you as they do, they still won't see you as a real business in the same way as when you're going into a networking meeting and explaining what you do. So there's something about that. But then there's also that very lonely place of if something goes wrong and things do all the time, who do you talk to about it that you don't want to be sharing things that are going wrong with people? You want to be only sharing the good news, because that's what encourages people to support you in business. So it's a really different, so it can be a very lonely place, can't it? Definitely, for sure.
Yeah, it really can, but I also don't want to do it down. I think it's been such a fantastic journey, and yeah, I would encourage anyone. I guess I'm really proud to talk openly about mental health challenges, because I would have before thought that someone like me couldn't do this, or would really have to overcome a lot more in order to do it. But actually, the fact that I have a really seasonal product kind of helps me, because I have really full on times, but then I can also map things out and be prepared for those full on times, and kind of get through it a bit more easily.
I think the advantage of running your own business is that you can actually take things at your own pace to a certain extent, can't you? That's
Sure.
one of the beauties of it. I mean, I think for me, whenever things felt too much, that was me putting that pressure on myself. Whereas in fact, you can actually slow things down if you want to. You sometimes feel that you shouldn't, but I think when the word should or shouldn't comes into it, that's when you need to be saying, actually, we need to be thinking about what's the right thing here for us as well as everything else. And sometimes things that you're wasting time on, you talked about social media, spending a lot of time on social media and advertising and those kind of things, they can take a huge amount of time and pressure and money, but actually don't reap a lot of benefit when it comes down to it. So it's choosing the things that really do make a difference and being able to make wise choices about that kind of thing.
Yeah, I definitely see so many small businesses describing social media as a necessary evil, and I understand that, but at the same time, so many opportunities have come about through that and through the conversations, and it can be a great space. It's just the moderation that's needed. Not moderating it, but everything in moderation.
Exactly. And I think being yourself as well. So I think whenever I've spoken with agencies and things like that, they say, oh, you should be doing this. You'll get more views if you do this. You'll get more. I think you have to listen and take on other people's knowledge. But at the same time, you have to do with what you're comfortable with. And if that means you do get less views or you're not up until goodness knows what time making graphics and things like that, then sometimes you have to choose the path that works for you and just accept the consequences. But yes, like you, I mean, there's been some amazing opportunities and connections and things just because you're starting to share things on social media. So and networking, online networking has been one of the most amazing things as a solopreneur, I have to say. Definitely. Now that's all really interesting. You mentioned scale as well, and I was going to say that to you because as a sustainable small business owner, especially in an incubator, quite a lot of pressure, isn't there, to be always upping your revenues and your turnovers and all of those kind of things, and how can you lower your cost prices and how can you make more money for the business and that kind of thing. And that's a quite a difficult bedfellow in sustainability, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, yeah, it is a challenge, and I think especially in the very early stages, I was just relying on my own ethical barometer to know what the right decision would be. I have become more business minded, however, I'm still independent. I don't have shareholders to answer to, and it's important for me to remain that way because it is a passion project that's become a business, rather than as I've said before, I need enough to get by so that it's not just a hobby, but it's still a for-profit business. However, as I've seen from the years that I have been in business, I kind of had this optimistic view that, oh, it might be tough when you get going, but then it'll just be on the up and up from there. And how wrong I was. The line going up on the imaginary chart of profit, I don't know where that optimistic Emma came from, but it's been set right a few times. So yeah, it's like you say, it's a challenge, but I think it's still, if you can stick to your guns in terms of doing things because it's the right thing to do rather than a quick win, then that's going to be the way to go with kind of looking at it as a long-term plan. It was only yesterday that I was talking to a business mentor about what the ultimate goal with Soko was, and to be honest, I wasn't able to answer that because I just, it's not, it's such a personal thing that I haven't quite worked out what it would look like, whether I wind it down when I'm in my 80s, or whether I transition to an employee-owned model, or I sell it. I don't know what that looks like yet. So it's something that I feel like I hadn't needed to think about, but actually it's kind of useful to at least have broad idea of what that might look like.
I don't know, because I think that changes over time, and you'll probably find that you'll pivot the company in lots of different ways. I mean, one, if the ultimate goal is for you to make enough money to keep yourself and the lifestyle that you choose to have, and but keeping your values, it's more about looking at different markets and making sure they align with what your values are. I mean, we've talked offline about the idea of working with businesses before, and what could Soko offer. I know you offer some things for business, but for me, I think there's a lot of consumers, customers, users, whatever, out there who have really good sustainability radars, and they're making really good decisions. But I still think businesses lag a long way behind. So in terms of uniforms and corporate gifting and all of those kind of things, if one can replace some of the poorer decisions that are made with good ones, then it's like ticking two boxes, isn't it? Because you're bringing in revenue to your own business, but you're not creating items for items' sake. You're re making replacement items for items that are not being as good for the planet, if you see what I mean. So I don't know if you've thought about those kind of areas in your business planning.
Yeah, that's a good question, Joe. I guess when it comes to corporate relationships, the way that I tend to broach it, and this is an area, a massive area of the business. In fact, kind of our North Star and what got us to where we are, is about repair, and it's about extending the life of what you already own. So actually, when I do work with businesses, it's less about putting their logo on a sock, and it's been more about teaching workshops and embracing the mindfulness of mending and slowing down, and the enjoyment of this lost art that skipped a generation or two, but has really been making a comeback. So I've been into different businesses and taught workshops with them, their clients, and it's been a really great fun thing to do, over a few glasses of whatever and some snacks, but also a great way of explaining the sustainability mission and the importance of looking after what you have rather than just kind of replacing. But yeah, getting something of quality and making it last. So every pair of our socks comes with a swatch of yarn and darning needle, and I've been running our workshops since day one as well. So it runs in parallel, and that's been my main way of working with businesses to date, has been teaching, and giving talks.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because again, there's that slight balancing between creating product and which obviously you need to do as a business to turn over, but then also teaching people how to not byproducts by repairing. And that I always think that's quite an interesting balance, between when you're running a business between the traditionally over the last 40, 50 years with the market economy that we're unfortunately stuck in, it's all about make more, make cheaper, buy more. But the idea of your business making things, albeit making it in a really positive way, but then also teaching people not to buy things by repairing what they do. That's quite an interesting model that you've got there. So you're bringing in funding from both directions, which kind of almost seem to not, they seem to bang together.
Yeah, definitely. It's been pointed out that it seems counterintuitive that I would be encouraging people not to buy new, but actually, in the mission of things, if and when the time comes and someone who is a keen mender wants to pass on that skill, I find that more compelling and more exciting than just like, oh, well, yeah, I'll get another pack of three and oh, throw it away. Like I don't know, it kind of aligns better with what Soko's purpose is.
Yeah,
Yeah,
no, for
so
sure.
even if it is gifting, it's about passing on that mending message, because every pair has its little needle and thread with it. So it's saying, oh, had you considered that? And I have had feedback, especially in the early stages of oh, no one's going to mend their socks, but people do. People do. And if it's not your socks, darning is a skill that you can use on any kind of knitwear, and it's great fun to do. So yeah, big advocate for embracing craft and bringing that craft element back in, which is again kind of brings us full circle to talking about my manufacturers and how being able to get on a train for 2 hours and be with them and to really understand the shift from me as a hand knitter to something that's at scale, because obviously I can't hand knit for the world. Just talking of sustainability, it's just not a sustainable business model. So it was finding the kind of closest thing you could get to a lovingly hand knit pair of socks, but then yeah, making it last for as long as possible.
It's very empowering, isn't it? I mean, for people who you have a pair of socks and or an item and it's got a hole in it, it's quite empowering. I think most people, again, it's this market economy we've been brought up in this last 40, 50 years. But actually it gives us back our agency to be able to say, I'm going to repair that myself, I'm going to keep that item. Whereas we've been trained to just chuck something out and buy something new purely because of the market economy, which doesn't make any sense at all. So the fact that you're selling a pair of socks and giving yarn and a needle or whatever, the packaging for people to do that themselves, and also teaching people how to do that's a really good education lesson. But also it's giving more than just a pair of socks, isn't it? It's giving the person that agency to repair them or for themselves, which I think is, and a skill too.
It is, absolutely. And I think you become closer with the item that you've mended because you've actually invested that time. And it's really, this is why I don't offer a mending service. It's not just kind of like, oh, I'll stick my socks in the post and get a kind of nicely mended pair. No, it's about teaching that skill, because you get so much out of the doing of it. That's kind of the element that I want to spread as well.
Yeah, and I think that is going back to our grandmothers actually, and that it was the norm. If the socks in the household got a hole in, then they would be mended and they would last a lot longer because of that. But that's putting that love into that pair of socks, that community into that pair of socks or whatever item. So I think it's really important, and it probably sounds a bit weird to people listening that, why would you want to mend our socks? We haven't been doing that for, we moved on from doing that. No, we haven't moved on from doing that. We moved away from doing that. We need to move towards doing that again, because it's good for the planet, but it's also good for our mindfulness to be able to do that, as well as creating a skill. You're not always going to be able to just go out and buy a new pair of socks, and why would you want to? I think it's quite important. But your education doesn't stop there, does it? I mean, I think you told me you've written a book as well.
Yeah, that's right. So that was actually my lockdown project. So when I got tired of shouting into the void of the internet, I wrote a book called How to Quit Fast Fashion. So it's 100 tips on things that we can all do to have a more sustainable wardrobe. And it's nothing preachy. There's so much important material out there that does cover the terrible consequences of maintaining this model. but this is much more just practical advice, things that we can all do. So yes, it was a great project to work on, and it's kind of given me the confidence to write another book. So my plan this year is to be researching that, with the plan to write it this time next year.
And have you got mending socks as one of the things in your 100 items that you can do at
I
the
have,
beginning?
well, I've got Learn to Darn, which is number 98, I think, of the 100 tips. Yeah, Learn to Darn, Learn to Patch. But yeah.
That's good. So, coming near the end now. So, what's next for you and Soko? Where do you see yourself going, but also the brand? Where do you see that going?
So at the moment I am working on the lead times gearing up for autumn winter. So even when the sun finally starts to come out, I'm going to be thinking about us getting our woolies back on. So I am planning my winter range. I've gone into production on another reclaimed cotton collection, and that's the sort of shorter term production side of things. I'm looking to expand the teaching element of what I do. So I want to revisit the online course that we do. I want to do a slightly more advanced learning platform for that as well. So in the longer run, I think it's about scaling what I've currently got set up and in place to just sort of stress test it. And ultimately it'll be about partnerships with like-minded brands and doing things that open doors in a way that also give other brands a leg up, hopefully, because it's about passing it, playing it forward and passing it on with all of those who've given me a chance. So yeah.
I think collaboration, I mean, we've both said this before, but I think, in the UK, the brands who are smaller doing sustainable things tend to find that we work together because there's so many similarities, isn't there? So if you can give somebody else a bit of a support and they're supporting you, and it just helps everybody in the long term. When I always say it's not really about competition when you're in this environment, because you've kind of got a bigger picture in mind than just your revenue at the end of the month, really.
You're so right. Yeah, it's a humbling reminder that it's not about competition, because ultimately we have different missions but the same goal. So yeah, it's encouraging to think of us as a collaborative team rather than silos that are kind of all just keeping their knowledge to themselves. So yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So, if anybody's listening and they want to find out more about you, or maybe buy some socks, or book onto one of your teaching workshops, how can they do that?
Yeah, thanks. So they can visit the website. So the website is Soko, that's sock with an O on the end, .shop. And they can also find me on Instagram, and all of the platforms, to varying degrees. And that's at Soko Shop, all one word.
Brilliant. And I need to ask now, why Soko?
Soko, okay. Good question. Honest answer, because Doggo, Socko, it was a kind of lead on from there. But happy coincidence, Socko also means something extremely well done. So it was kind of I think it was a phrase from back in the day, and they'd be like, oh, that was a Socko performance or whatever it may be. So yeah, it kind of tied in very well. And also, as small businesses out there will know, it was available, which is always a bit of
That
a coup.
helps. Although you probably struggle with me. I mean, I came up with where does it come from, and then realized that it was right near the end of the alphabet. So whenever you've got any list of brands, always at the bottom. You're like, oh no, I never thought of that. Should have called it
Yeah.
A. Where does it come from? Anyway, that's brilliant. Thank you so much, Emma.
Thanks,
Is there
Joe.
anything else you wanted to add where people can find you, or what you think we haven't covered in this talk?
No, I've been delighted to chat with you and to open up a little bit more about Soko and the world of mending. So thank you for the opportunity, Joe.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. So everybody go over and check out Soko and buy your socks ready for autumn 24, or actually the way things are going at that, for spring 24.
Yeah, the next big sock event in the calendar will be Father's Day. So yeah,
Good point. Yes, Father's Day, June, isn't it?
yes.
And men wear socks all year round.
They do. This is the thing, Jo. So many people wear socks all year round, but people tend not to buy socks all year round. So it does remain quite a seasonal product. But yes, we're open all year round.
Yeah,
So
open for Father's Day. Perfect.
yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Emma, for spending time with us today on the Where Does It Come From podcast.
Thanks, Jo.
Thank you for listening to the Where Does It Come From podcast. Please rate us on your platform and follow us so that we can share this podcast with more people. And if you'd like to find out more about the work of Where Does It Come From, please visit our website on wheredoesitcomefrom.co.uk for kind clothes that tell tales.